Hello and welcome to the Work Inspired Podcast. I'm your host, George Lucas Pfeiffer. On today's episode, we have the Chief Human Resources Officer for SIBO Global Markets. Stephanie Foley's here to talk about workplace culture, creating a great place to work, and the future of work, inspiring innovation and loyalty. It's a great conversation with a lot to unpack. Let's not waste another minute. Work Inspired starts right now. Stephanie, thank you so much for being here. So excited to talk to you and to have you on the show in person.
It is so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So the question we ask every guest at the start of the interview is, tell your professional story. How'd you get to where you're at today and what are you currently doing?
So when I was a wild-eyed college student, I was a psychology major. Mm-hmm. And I love that field of study. The human mind is absolutely fascinating mm-hmm. to me. And I took a course in undergrad called organizational psychology, which is psychology applied to the workforce, mm-hmm. which was a completely just different way of utilizing that field of study. And I joke all the time of being a psychology major. A lot of people think about going into counseling, right, or being a psychologist. And I thought, I don't want to, you know, listen to people's problems all day. So I went into HR and I listened to people's problems all day. But I ended up then going on and doing a master's in organizational psychology and found out there are really two paths you can go down. One is sort of in-house HR type of work and the other being consulting work. I'm more of a creature of habit and I like my routines. So the in-house HR really appealed to me. Over the years, I've had the great fortune. I think some of it has been good luck and some of it hard work to expand my career. And I've always worked in professional services. So I started out in financial services, moved over to management consulting, and I'm back now. It's a little bit like coming home mm-hmm. in financial services. And I am the CHRO for SIBO Global Markets, headquartered here in Chicago.
Wonderful. That's a great story. And we'll talk more about some of the roles the HR leader plays at an organization like SIBO, but let's talk about SIBO. For those who aren't familiar, what does the company do? What makes it unique? What makes it special?
So SIBO is a global financial services organization. We are an exchange. Mm. What that means is we are a marketplace. We are traditionally known for being in the options space. So if you want to trade options on an exchange, SIBO is where you would come to do that. Over the last couple of years, we have expanded massively. Mm. So have grown geographically over the last couple of years. We expanded into the APAC region mm-hmm. and then product-wise as well. So expanded the different asset classes and different products we offer to our clients. And that's what makes it really fun at the moment. So somebody said to me the other day at work, you know, we're kind of like a startup, but with a lot of money. and not to be crass, we are, you know, we do well as an organization and we're publicly traded. So you can mm-hmm. go out and find all mm-hmm. that information. But the stage we're at in development, mm-hmm. Having grown really rapidly over the last couple of years, lends itself to people who are entrepreneurial and innovative because we grew so rapidly, we're still finding our way in a mm-hmm. couple of areas, which means you can bring new ideas. It doesn't have to be the status quo. We can change things. We're looking to grow and change things on a regular basis. And so that's what makes it really fun right now.
Was all that growth spurned by entering new markets or adding new offerings? What's kind of been the catalyst for this growth?
For the most part, inorganic growth, so M&A, uh-huh. Which means we're also integrating a lot of different cultures. And it's part of our strategy. We have a strategy around going into different geographic markets and how you build up knowledge of options trading. Options trading takes just a bit more technical expertise than some other types of, mm-hmm. of trading. And so it's all about building an ecosystem around options trading, which has been part of our strategy for the last few years and has worked out pretty well. And so we're just continuing on and building around that strategy.
Do you call them employees?
We call them associates. I like to call them people.
Okay, there's a great answer. Yeah. How many people are part of the SIBO organization?
We're almost 1,700 now globally.
Very nice. And what is the current way of working? Is it an in-person? Is it hybrid? Does it vary by geography? How do you handle that?
Overall, mm-hmm. we have a corporate sort of policy or approach, I'll say. I'm not big for policies. Mm-hmm. I like guidelines mm-hmm. And general approaches. I think there's always an exception and good reasons mm-hmm. for exceptions. But overall, our approach is to be flexible. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll talk a lot more mm-hmm. about what that means to us and why it's important in general. We treat grown-ups like grown-ups. Mm-hmm. So where you need to be to get your work done mm-hmm. Is where we want you to be. Mm. Some offices do things like come into the office one day a week, and this is the day we're all going to try to come in so that we can spend time together. Some people are hybrid, and they come in two or three times a week because that's what they prefer to do. Some people are still 100% remote. Mm. And it does have its challenges, and we have to address those head on, but it also has its rewards. Mm-hmm. And I do think differentiates us.
As it relates to culture, I mean, you talked about entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. When I think about traders, maybe ignorantly, I think of a trading floor and everybody sure. waving and shouting yeah. and being very competitive, right? And yeah. fast paced. Yeah. What is the Cboe culture like?
Yes. And we do have a trading floor here in Chicago, and it's beautiful. And if you ever want a tour, let us know. That said, our organization is actually a technology organization, really, really driven by technology. That is the trend across all financial services and many industries.
Right.
So nothing sort of unique or right. new there. Even if we look at our population, we are heavily dominated in technology and operations. Mm-hmm. Also a lot of legal and regulation when you're trading, in different regulated entities. Mm. We think of ourselves as a very technology driven.
And does that influence the culture that you're promoting within the Cboe, team structure or when you're hiring people? How does being a tech company impact corporate culture?
Sure. I think when you look at who your competitors are, you look at who your competitors are in the product space, mm-hmm. but you also look at who your competitors are from a talent perspective. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, want to be competitive in a talent perspective when we're hiring, technology expertise. Yep. So flexibility is something we know in the technology community is just something that is cherished and also something that is more common. Mm-hmm. You can do your work and you are technology enabled to do your work mm-hmm. from lots of different places. Innovation mm-hmm. also and the speed of change. I know you said financial services, you think of high-paced. I agree, mm-hmm. Fast-paced, markets moving and closing every day and things like that. I would say it's even more so in a technology-driven financial services organization. So definitely fast-paced and just trying to keep up with the rate of change.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you think about tech companies in North America and think about Silicon Valley and you think about the West Coast primarily, mm-hmm. although there's clearly tech hubs in Chicago and New York, they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. How much does the geography of where your people are at influence the level of flexibility or the culture or just, how you think about way of working?
Mm-hmm.
And do you look at other regions or do you take cues from other offices that you have to make future decisions for other geographies?
Sure, sure. It was interesting. We were looking at it recently. We look at our population of our team that is remote, mm-hmm. fully remote. They're almost all in the U.S.
Mm.
It is just not as prevalent mm-hmm. For us across Europe or Asia for people to want to work 100% remote. And I think the beautiful thing about our approach is that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do what works, locally to optimize for everyone.
I've said this before on this podcast as we've talked to people leaders, but one of my favorite things that came out of the pandemic was that it seems like CHROs and CPOs are now sitting at the table as organizations make space decisions because creating a great place to work is really about creating an environment for a high-performing team. And so when you think about what is a great place to work, whether it's your headquarters or a remote office or a fully remote experience, what does that mean? Because I know you've achieved it. I've seen you've got the awards up on your website. But from the leader of the HR leader at Cboe, what does that mean to you?
I honestly think it's there's no secrets. I think it's actually pretty basic. It's basic to understand. I think it can be complicated or just harder to do. Mm-hmm. So there's a few components to it. There's a theory in psychology called self-determination theory, which essentially says people need three things in life to feel sort of well-adjusted and just general well-being. One of those things is autonomy. And the flexibility we were talking about is how I view giving people autonomy at work. There aren't a ton of things you can consistently give everyone autonomy over. What you work on really does need to be directed, right? It needs to align with the goals of the organization. Who you work with, even what times you work, those all have to be coordinated with many other people. Where you work from is something that generally speaking, especially, you know, in this technology-enabled world we live in, is something you can give people autonomy over. When you make that part of your corporate culture, I'll tell you a story about me this week. It makes a difference. I'm a working mom. I have two little kids, a five-year-old and a three-year-old. And this week, my five-year-old was sick and he had to stay home from school for a couple of days. Any organization, I'm sure, would say, you're a senior person, or, you know, of course, you know, we support working moms. So please, you know, take the time that you need. The difference for me, and I think for a lot of our people, is it's just a standard way of working. Whether you come in, whether you don't come in on any given day, I didn't feel that extra mental load thinking, well, how will people perceive me if I have to stay home and just be there for my child? I could work all day. He's very self-sufficient, but I couldn't leave him alone. Will that be perceived as me being less dedicated to my work or something like that? So that mental load not being there, because it's simply part of our culture to be able to make those decisions for yourself when you need to, and to also know when you need to be there, when your team members are in, or when you just need to, you know, show a little FaceTime, or when there's some very, you know, strategic meetings going on. It is, I think, you know, giving people autonomy to make the right choices and then giving them feedback if they're not making the right choices. So that's one way I think about being a great place to work, sort of aligning back to just some basic human psychology. And then, you know, for an HR person, we of course think about benefits. And that's always something, right, that people want to talk about. What makes this company unique in terms of what you offer? So just philosophically, we have an approach of being either at market at minimum across all of our benefits, and then above market where we can be and where it means something to people. So one of our benefits that I think is sort of unique and kind of above market is our approach to when people need time off for usually really tough reasons. So a lot of companies have a bereavement leave policy. We did have one of those. And what we realized, and this goes back to sort of we're this growing organization, if you see something that you want to change, bring the idea up and we'll talk about changing it. And that is exactly what somebody did. Somebody came to me and said, you know, we have this bereavement leave program. My father passed away and 5 days of bereavement leave is really not enough. And we said, you know what? You're right. You can't put a time limit on grief. And so we changed our program completely. And we call it compassionate leave. You might need compassionate leave for a lot of different reasons. I had a colleague recently whose best friend was very, very sadly dying of cancer. And she wanted to be there for her last days and then help the family through the funeral process. And we said, of course, that's what compassionate leave is for. And you can take it for up to a month. And it's all about being there for people when they need it. And if you have a policy that says you take 5 days and then you go back to work, that's not really being there for someone when they need it. You have a sick friend that you want to care for and be there for, go do that. That's what's important to us, because those people will come back and they will take care of your company if you take care of them.
Do you find, and maybe this is, I imagine this is, it's still a challenge even if you have 1,700 employees, but I think we have 170 employees. And so there's many roles within our organization that have no redundancy. So do you find that when you expand a service, a compassionate leave program from 5 days to a month, that you have to put protections in or plan for covering for something like that? And like, do you premeditate that? Or do you, when it happens, you say, we'll figure out a way?
Yeah. Just as me personally, I am a, let's just do it and we'll figure out how to address things as they come up. I also really believe in paying it forward. And so if you've, you know, you've got a team and you're not there, everybody steps in and picks up the slack. Because when you need it, that's what the team will do also. And the truth is, we all are somewhat expendable. If, you know, I don't use the hit by a bus. I use the win the lotto example. If you win the lotto and you don't need to, you just don't come into work the next day, what are you going to do? You're going to figure it out.
Well, and I think the important thing to think through with something like your compassionate leave program is that's not just a policy that's set by HR or by the organization as a benefit, but it's the team coming together to support that person and fill in those gaps while they're taking that needed time, right? So it's very interesting to think through that way. How do you balance between autonomy? Because you had you'd finished that segment by saying, we let them know when there needs to be a change. One of the biggest benefits, I think, of being together in person is the mentorship and the development and the training. So how do you balance autonomy with also the benefit of peer-to-peer development and accountability even?
There's a couple of ways that we address it. And I just think generally a couple of ways you can approach these types of things. There are, at different points in your career, you might need different things. And so having flexibility also means allowing for that to happen at different points in your career. If you're newer to just, you know, working and being in an office setting and just being more corporate or professional, maybe you should come in a bit more often. And we can recommend that. We trust people to make good decisions. We also trust our people leaders to give the right guidance to people. A lot of times, if there's feedback that needs to be given, sometimes that feedback is, let's come into the office more so we can actually spend time, you know, sitting near each other as you have questions. And also, I think giving people the permission when we are working remotely or, you know, in this hybrid model to say, here's our ways of working. It's okay for you to just ping me anytime because we have these, you know, we use Microsoft Teams and you can send me a chat anytime and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Setting up those working norms for people that are new to the organization so that you can get that peer-to-peer in, albeit obviously a sort of different environment. But there's working norms. I think being really clear with people leaders on what expectations to set with your folks. We still believe in FaceTime and being together. So each of our departments has a budget to bring people together throughout the year. Each of our offices does do these sort of, you know, hey, we're in the office on Wednesdays. If you want to be here, this is when we're going to be here. We call them connection days. So there are ways if you're intentional about it. If you just let it go and say, you know, we're not going to be intentional about this, then I think you will get into problems. We also have a formal mentorship program. People get matched, and I've been matched with folks overseas. I have a mentee in our Amsterdam office. And so it's a connection I actually never would have built otherwise.
That's awesome. And you layer in opportunity. And then I think the other thing is communication, just like showing people why it's important to do certain things or take advantage of certain things, because some of it is just going to be self-driven and who you hire, but others is going to be, it takes some convincing, you know, like, or it takes some at least insight as to where there's opportunities and why it's important sometimes to be together. As you think to the future, and we've talked a lot about hybrid already, but as you look 5 years out, what are you preparing for? How are you making sure that as you grow this quickly, and I'm guessing you're not done growing, how do you support your people moving forward?
Many different things. We have been talking about what does our future of work look like? And maybe there's some shifting, but not overhauling. So potentially just putting on the table, would we step away from fully remote associates? Obviously, letting people continue to do what they're doing if they're already with us. Or maybe just limit if you're at a certain level, you know, a more junior level, we'd want you closer to an office so that you can come in and have some of those experiences developing that we were talking about. Don't know yet, but that's, you know, think about 5 years out, that's probably something we'd have to consider. The other investment that we're making, which is really about building the future, is in leadership. Leadership development. I believe that training or learning opportunities are a great reason to bring people together.
One of the best, right?
So it's a great way to create the community and sort of spread that cultural feeling. And it serves a purpose. It's not just getting together. Mm-hmm. You're learning skills and building networks. And so that's a big part of our investment this year and for the next foreseeable future, I'd say.
And it's interesting too when you talk about being a tech company and also flexibility, that it has to extend into your policies too, right? Because I think that the pandemic clearly ushered in a lot of change in how we work, but some of the technology that's coming down the line very quickly seems to be, if not the same amount, or probably more of a change catalyst. So I think saying, yeah, we're not sure yet, we're going to keep looking at it, you know, and just like we're going to offer flexibility and we're going to treat grownups like grownups.
Yep.
We can have a plan, but we also have to think that might change, you know, and be open to that.
I mean, you write a policy and then it's all of a sudden it's immediately sort of stale the minute like you've gone through all the reviews on it. And we do have a lot of reviews in our processes. So I like guidelines for that reason, because guidelines change.
And having a strong culture, I think, is also a thing that will be constant throughout. And your policies and your procedures and your communication can kind of shift around that.
Yeah.
But if that's core, I think you'll have success. Let's talk about innovation. That's a term important to most businesses, but especially a tech-forward company needs to be innovating. How do you inspire it?
One of the concepts we talk about as a leadership team is this idea of a blameless culture. And what that means is we're all going to screw up. We are human beings. We make mistakes. It is part of the human condition. We are not perfect, as close as some of us might think we are to that. I myself make many mistakes. The critical element here is that if you make a mistake, you're not punished for it. You learn from it. We get better as an organization, and we move forward. And if you can have that sort of core to your culture, then people are not afraid to try new things, to experiment. And that's what innovation is all about, having an idea and being courageous enough to make it happen. If you are in an environment where there's fear of failure, then you're never going to try anything new. And if all of your incentives, you know, are tied to not making a mistake, then you're not incentivized to try anything new.
How do you have a blameless culture where you're still able to talk about mistakes and talk about failure? How do you navigate that?
We actually have regular meetings that are set up to talk about them and just sort of reviews. Okay, what happened? How do we make sure it doesn't happen again?
Sure.
So repeated mistakes or repetition of the same mistakes, not ideal,
right.
Not cool, but making a mistake, learning from it, talking about it as a team, and then moving forward to be better is a really great way. I think, to do it. We're just really intentional.
And positioning it like an opportunity.
Like an opportunity.
Right, right.
The language, the words that are used, right, are really important.
Interesting. Yeah. Do you find yourself reverting back to your psychology training and kind of trying to emulate some of that in these conversations? Or, I mean, because it seems to me like that would be an incredible skill, not just for an HR leader, but also for just a manager in general, to have some training on how you talk and the words that you use. And, you know, I mean, I'll read some books myself, but I've never gone through any sort of a psychology training.
Yeah.
I actually think it probably would be beneficial, though, as a leader.
Yeah. I think if every leader did a little Psych 101, they'd probably be better for it. And actually, I can't take credit for this concept of a blameless culture. While I think it's actually a phenomenal concept and does motivate people and does motivate innovation, it actually comes from our technology team. It is a way that they sort of organize themselves and they look at things that broke. How do we fix it and how do we make sure it doesn't break again?
We've had a number of head of innovations or chief transformation officers on this show. And I'm always interested in how organizations define innovation and how they, if they compartmentalize it. So like you have a technology team, do they champion innovation at SIBO, or is it something that you kind of expect all of your people to be a contributor to?
Yeah, I'd say the latter. Mm. So everyone is always contributing. And it goes back to kind of where we are. Mm. At least, and I'll say this, I joined the firm 2 years ago, mm-hmm. just about. And so it's been my experience for the last 2 years. Going back to what I spoke about at the beginning, all the growth, diversifying our products, diversifying geographically, there's a lot to catch up on. Mm-hmm. And so every team is trying to come up with better ways to do things, being better, faster, more efficient, more correct more often. Mm-hmm. And so it's across the board.
Let's talk a little bit about loyalty. Mm. A quick growing organization, mm-hmm. onboarding people very fast, spreading throughout different geographies. We do know that it seems that when people are together, they maybe are inherently more loyal just because of the stronger relationships that they are able to form. How do you look at team member loyalty? And I guess more importantly, how do you inspire it and try to increase it?
My personal point of view is maybe a little unique. You can mm-hmm. tell me mm-hmm. On this one. I don't think that the expectation is that people stay at your company for their entire careers. Mm. Well, we know that that's not the expectation anymore, right? And so what we're really talking about is engagement. Mm. While they're there, mm-hmm. are you getting the best? Mm. Are you getting the best of your people while they're with you? Mm-hmm. Or are you creating quiet quitters? Because mm-hmm. you could have loyalty. I know you can't see me using air quotes on a podcast, I just realized. But you can have people who on paper appear to be loyal because they've been there a long time. Mm. But if they are not engaged in what they're doing, mm-hmm. what's the point? Mm-hmm. So what are you really trying to measure? I think what you're trying to measure is engagement.
Yeah.
And that's about all the things we've been talking about to make your organization a great place to be is not to just get people to stick around. It's to get them to want to go that extra mile mm. for your company.
That's a great perspective and a great way to look at it, because I think, yes, we'd all as leaders love our best people to stay as long as they retire with us, right?
Right.
But the reality, especially with younger people, is that most of us have not worked at only one organization. In fact, I know mm-hmm. very few people who have. So the engagement piece, I think, is a great lens to put on loyalty. I think the challenge becomes, how do you measure engagement? Because mm-hmm. I think we saw very clearly during the pandemic that a lot of these studies were saying, oh, look at all the emails sent, that's not engagement, or all the meetings held, mm-hmm. that's just because mm-hmm. we were forced to schedule them. So we lost the serendipitous engagement, I think, and some of the things that inspire innovation at companies were put on the back burner until we were able to get through that. Mm-hmm. How do you look at measuring engagement? And mm-hmm. I'm sure there's not just one way to look at it. There's probably many, right? But is that something you're able to quantify at SIBO?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
To the point you were saying, how many meetings were held or emails sent, productivity isn't the right measure.
Yeah.
Right. Because what you actually want to get at is kind of quality.
Mm.
But the way we measure it, and I don't think this is particularly unique, it is very psychologically driven, mm-hmm. though, through our engagement surveys.
Okay.
And those surveys are curated by a third party that works with us to identify the key drivers mm-hmm. of engagement and make sure we understand as an organization what's driving engagement for our people. And the flexibility piece is actually one of those. We can analyze our data to say, are the people who are in a hybrid model slightly more motivated or engaged than those who are not? And the answer is yes. Mm. And then we have fantastic data scientists who work through it with us and help us make sure we're making the right connections. We can look at it from almost any demographic standpoint. So where somebody is, different diversity or sort of profiles. So you can get a ton of amazing information. Mm-hmm. The really important thing when you're measuring engagement and you're asking people about how they feel about certain aspects of the work is that you then do something mm-hmm. with it. So actually one of mm-hmm. our questions on our engagement survey is, do you believe anything will happen mm-hmm. with your feedback? And we get pretty high scores mm-hmm. on that. So it's a commitment that you have to follow through on.
We like to finish off each conversation with some more personal questions, although you can keep them professional. But you've had a lot of success in your career. You've been able to navigate the working mom lifestyle, it seems, effectively. What's a resource that you found to be valuable that you could recommend to others?
Yeah. There's a woman that I work with who's done some amazing work around women leaders. And what she does is bring women leaders together. Mm. And we do a lot of learning. Her name is Georgie Dickens. Mm. And she's, in addition to being a wonderful human being, she's absolutely brilliant. And creates that community for us. And I think that's the one piece of advice I'd have for other women is find your crew, find your community, and lean into that. You're not the only one struggling with how to balance it all. You're not the only one that's, you know, feeling anxious about asking for a raise. You know, you're not alone, and cheer each other on. Be each other's cheerleaders. A number of us get the opportunity to work with her. We've brought her over to speak to the whole organization as well. She does research too around what makes CEOs sort of unique unto themselves.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What's something that you're excited for in the year ahead?
Taking vacation.
Oh.
I should just, I just need to plan one.
Yeah. I know that how that goes. We just took one and it had been since 2019. That right? Time warp that was the pandemic got away from us. And yeah, you need to really carve out some time for that, don't you?
It's important. Mm-hmm. You come back better. You end up being just better for your teams, mm-hmm. better for your company, better for your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Advice for future leaders. My final question. What advice would you have if you retired tomorrow?
Mm. Well, I'm not retiring tomorrow.
You got a lot ahead of you.
One is to find your style.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to emulate anybody else's. You can pick up things mm-hmm. from other people that you admire and feel sort of natural to you and authentic to you. But put it all together into something that's uniquely mm-hmm. you. That would be number one. And number two, leadership is not something you do on the side in addition to your day job. Mm. Leadership is your day job.
Mm.
Make it the priority.
It's great advice. And this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much, Stephanie. It's been wonderful to chat with you and hear about the exciting things Cibo is doing now and has planned for the future, and appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, please take a moment to rate our show. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Work Inspired podcast so that you don't miss any of the incredible guests we have planned for upcoming episodes. We'll continue to find the best and brightest minds in business so that you can learn, grow, and succeed, and so that we can all work inspired. Work Inspired is brought to you by BOS, a leader in commercial working environments and a Hayworth best-in-class dealership. Experience our 360 approach and discover the team, tools, and techniques required to navigate the complexity of your next workspace at BOS.com. If you have ideas, feedback, or would like to be featured on our show, please email podcast@BOS.com. Thank you for listening. This has been a Workspace Digital production. If you're interested in launching a podcast at your organization, please email info@workspace.digital for a free consultation.